Thank you for the introduction. Hopefully I don't blow you out with this microphone because I do have kind of a loud voice. If I do, somebody just tell me to quiet down. So, as you said, I'm Deputy Schrader. I'm from the Clinton County Sheriff's Office. Part of my duties there is I'm currently assigned to detectives. That's why I don't have a uniform on like most deputy sheriffs or police officers that you see. I spend part of my time doing internet investigations, not all. I do work on other types of cases, you know, run-of-the-mill burglaries, thefts, but I also work on sexual abuse cases and then also the internet cases. Just briefly, the Clinton County Sheriff's Office since 2008 is part of the Iowa Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. And that was a task force that was put together with prosecutors and law enforcement people at the federal, state, and local level. So in a lot of the cases that I've worked over the years, I've worked with law enforcement officers at the federal level, prosecutors at the federal level. We have a very close working relationship with the United States Attorney's Office in Davenport, Iowa. And the reason being is that at the federal level, the penalties for people who exploit children online is very, very much tougher than it is at the state level. For example, people that try to meet minors online for sexual purposes, they get a mandatory minimum 10-year sentence in the federal system. Where at the state level, we are only at a D felony now, which could be anything from probation up to 5 years in prison. So we work very closely with them. We also work closely with agents at the state level. So I've gone outside of Clinton County quite a bit, been all the way up to Dubuque and out to Iowa City working on child exploitation cases that have involved the internet. So this presentation that I'm going to show you tonight is made by an organization called NetSmarts, and they have a lot of resources on there for parents, kids, teachers, law enforcement officers. For those in the back, if you can't see it, it's netsmarts.org. I encourage you to visit that website and look at some of the resources they have on there. Also, this program is put together with help from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Some of you maybe have heard of them. If there's missing kids, they help put out posters and help law enforcement officers try to find kids that are missing. And they're also a big help for the online solicitation things. They provide like this presentation. They also do like age regression photos. I don't know if you probably have seen where kids that go missing or kidnapped, and it's maybe been a long period of time, they will do alterations to see how they would look as an older person. So that's kind of where this comes from. So, okay, so what we're going to talk a little bit is about the different types of way that kids can get online. I think the first time that I had internet in my life was probably back in 1997. We had dial-up. Some of these kids back here are like, well, what's that? parents have to realize that we now live in a time where technology is exploding and applications and devices, are getting faster and can do more things on a daily basis. We can't just worry about the desktop computer or the laptop computer anymore. We have the cell phones now, MP3 players, the gaming devices, e-readers and tablets, all with internet connectivity. If you go out and buy a brand new Chevrolet pickup or a car now, you can get internet connectivity with it. Everything is going and being connected online. So a lot of times, I've had parents come in and they're like, found my son or daughter was talking with some guy on PlayStation 4 when they were playing a game. And they're like, you can talk to people that you're playing games against? I'm like, yes. You can talk to people that you're playing games with, probably back to 2009 is when that probably started. So a lot of parents don't know that. Of course, cell phones. I mean, everywhere we go now, teenagers have smartphones. I don't know many that probably don't. So very important to be aware that almost every device that a teenager might have now is going to be able to connect to the internet. So what do kids do online? Obviously, we have the social media sites, very popular, Facebook, Twitter. There's a lot of them out there. We would be here for hours if we tried to talk about them all. Obviously, YouTube is very popular, looking at videos, making videos, sharing pictures and videos. Going back to the very first time I had the internet, if you wanted to upload a photograph, it might take you a whole day to do something like that. And now if I wanted to, I could take a picture with my cell phone of this group and it would instantaneously be shared with everybody on my Facebook account. So that's how much things have changed in the last 20-some years. So, and then obviously, you know, we talked about the gaming. That can be on computers, on cell phones as well. And then obviously, you know, the console systems, the PlayStation, Xbox. So there's a lot of things out there that are facing kids when it comes to safety and security, and these are some of the topics that we're going to get into a little bit tonight. Encountering inappropriate content or teenagers creating it themselves and then sharing it, and some of the issues that come with that. Online privacy, the sexting, sharing, and creating inappropriate images and videos. I don't think a lot of kids realize what the consequences are and what happens to a lot of that content, those photos and those videos when they're shared. And I'll kind of talk a little bit about, I used to do a lot of undercover chatting, and I've kind of moved out of that area of investigation. And I'm more now into adults that share child pornography on file sharing networks. And we're kind of seeing now that the, I guess if you would call it the selfies taken by teens, are ending up in large-scale child pornography sharing people in their collections. And it's interesting when we ask them, where did you get that from? And so we'll talk a little bit about that. So we're going to talk a little bit about online sexual solicitation, that is adults who would meet and communicate with kids online and then try to get them or entice them into a real life meeting for a sexual encounter. And then we're going to talk about cyberbullying, which yeah, I think is going to be good, kind of considering what we heard from the previous talk. So when we talk to parents about when's the right time to start talking to your kids about internet safety, my son is going to be turning 8 years old tomorrow, and I think he's been using YouTube for about 2 years now. He likes to get on there and watch videos of Minecraft and stuff about Legos. So you have to start thinking that at that young of an age, you need to start talking about, you know, being safe online, what to do if you come across something inappropriate. So always for younger kids, you talk about netiquette. That's kind of, you know, being a good digital citizen. You don't say mean things on there. You know, don't make fun of other kids on there. Don't bully kids on there. Don't post hate speech. Looking at inappropriate content, I don't think a lot of real young kids, little kids, go out and look for it, but they could accidentally come across it. So it's good to have a conversation about, well, this is what you need to do if you see something that makes you uncomfortable. And then obviously, I think an important thing is you don't trust everyone that you meet online. I go around and talk at a lot of schools, and I'll ask kids, well, how many friends do you have on Facebook or Twitter? And some of them are like 2,000 or 3,000 friends. And I'm like, do you know all those people? No. Well, how do you know who they say they are then? So kind of a big thing is only befriend people that you know. That's a message I try to get across to kids. And then obviously for the older teenagers is the cyberbullying issue. There can be consequences for that, just like we saw what can a person can be forced to do after they just give up, they've had enough. That that's kind of a rare thing, but it does happen where somebody will take their life from being cyberbullied. And then the sexting, sharing the images, posting too much personal or inappropriate information, and then the meeting offline is more so for teenagers in that 13 to 16 year old range. Those are the ones that are, in my opinion, susceptible to being enticed by an adult to go meet somewhere, and then something bad could happen. So inappropriate content, obviously the kids are gonna run across is pornography, even young kids. Adults that try to entice young kids into a meeting, and I think later in these slides there's a little information about it. They do what's called grooming, and part of that process is showing young people inappropriate images and trying to desensitize them to it. And they'll say things like, well, see this, here's somebody your age in this picture, there's nothing wrong with this. So that's one way that pornography is used in these type of things. They can also come across excessive violence. We've had cases where kids are beat up and somebody, a bystander, might video record it and then share it. So kids can be exposed that way. Obviously hate speech, saying mean things about other kids, or posting about doing or committing violence somewhere. There's consequences for that. And then also risky or illegal behaviors. I guess I would kind of define that as posting pictures or videos about alcohol use or illegal drug use. So a lot of different things out there to kind of keep an eye on and to let kids know that there can be consequences. If any kids ever come across any of this type of thing, I guess for parents how to respond is, especially sometimes if the kids are the ones that are doing it, is don't fly off the handle right away. You know, kind of don't frighten them. Listen to what they're saying. If it's something they came across accidentally, you know, that's not their fault. We've all came across stuff on the internet that's like, you know, junk mail or something's come up on our screen. You know, that's not our fault. You know, that just happens sometimes. And it's the same way with kids. So, you know, try to answer any questions they have about something they've seen online the best you can. And help them report it, especially in the cases of if they get inappropriate pictures or videos from somebody, or somebody is bullying them, kind of like Josh touched on, tell somebody. That's the most important thing. We can't stop it or help you until somebody knows about it. So tell a teacher or tell a police officer, you know, we can help you. If any kids do come across inappropriate content, you know, there's things that they kind of do. They can turn off the screen, they can hit the back button, and then obviously tell a trusted adult. And there's websites and apps where you can report inappropriate content if they come across anything. We really try to get across to kids is don't post any inappropriate or illegal behavior. Anything that is open to the public and law enforcement could see, there could be consequences legally for that. We've had cases where kids have posted pictures of drinking and drug use, and then obviously if the police see that, they're going to probably be paying them a visit. And now there could be criminal charges or consequences getting kicked out of school or removed from athletic teams. The same way with offensive language, the threats of violence. I think we've all seen where, not so much around here, but probably nationwide, kids will make threats about doing violence in schools online. They'll post about that. We've already talked about the underage drinking, same with the hate speech. Those are all things just to avoid posting. It's kind of an example there of what the consequences can be. I kind of noticed this last year watching Iowa football that Kirk Ferentz doesn't allow the players to have Twitter, and I think that's probably kind of a good idea because I see a lot of other college football players and athletes. It just seems to kind of get them in trouble. So So as for parents, what can you do? You can, you know, talk about and establish expectations for online behavior. You know, tell your kids, it's like, well, if this happens, this is going to be the, you know, the consequences, you know, if you do anything appropriate. You know, talk about appropriate usernames. You know, look at their comments and pictures. I think a lot of times parents turn over all this technology to kids and then they give it to them and they never look at it again. And that's where the problems, in my opinion, start. Is parents need to be looking on those cell phones and on those tablets and on those laptops, and a lot of them don't. I was just talking to my partner about it today. He's got a son in eighth grade at Comanche, and he's like, yeah, I haven't looked at his phone in probably about a year. I'm like, well, maybe you should. You know, and another thing I tell parents is it's okay to allow, you know, allow it. Technology is a good thing, and websites and apps and all that, but, you know, maybe the agreement is you can have it, but I need to be able to have access to it. I need to know the passwords. I need to be able to look at it anytime I want. So, and then also talk about what their friends are posting. You know, just because their friends are doing inappropriate things, that doesn't mean it's okay for them. So, online privacy, you know, what's okay? You know, obviously pictures of family and friends. I think everybody does that. But again, I think the important thing is when you share photos and videos to the social media websites, you need to only have friends on there, people that you know. Because if you have strangers on there, you're sharing everything with somebody you have no idea who they are or how they could use that. You know, pictures can be easily copied and saved and changed with Photoshop. You know, casual conversation in a video game, yeah, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, certain kinds of personal information like date of births, probably cell phone numbers, you know, where you go to school, things like that, that's probably getting a little not to be okay. Probably too much information, especially if it gets shared with people you don't know. You know, obviously, I think a lot of teenagers and classmates like to share passwords. I don't recommend that. Most of you parents probably know how it goes with kids. They're friends one day, and then they get in a fight, and then somebody has access to your Facebook page and can go in there and make changes or make posts. That's, we've had that. Obviously, you don't want to share your home address, your location, your cell phone number, email addresses. I kind of tell kids, too, you have to be careful with the photographs. You know, we have a couple of schools in Clinton County that are in rural areas, Wheatland and Northeast. And I tell the kids out there, if you put pictures on there that says you go to Northeast High School, or you live in Goose Lake, Iowa, and you have pictures of your house and your mom and dad's car, if there was a bad person out there that wanted to find out where you live, how long would it take them to drive around Goose Lake or Charlotte to find where you live? Probably about 2 minutes. So, you know, pictures and stuff, okay, but if you're sharing it with a lot of people you don't know, those are some of the problems that you can invite. So, and then obviously there's the risk of identity theft, online scams, hacking. I mean, even for teenagers, you know, you can have your date of birth and your name used, have your identity stolen, have, you know, lines of credit open, things like that. You know, establish rules with your kids about what they can share. You know, maybe look at photographs first before they get shared, and, you know, make sure mom and dad say, yep, that's okay, go ahead, put that on there. Learn about where you can report. This next one kind of goes for adults, because I'm not even sure I totally understand how privacy works on Facebook. I've gone in there, and I'll kind of change my privacy settings, and I have an undercover one, and I go look at my own, and I'm like, well, I can still see things, and I'm not friends with my undercover profile. So understand how they work and what people that you're not friends with can see when they look at your profile. A lot of times, especially with Facebook, I think when they do updates, they get changed, and you have to go back in and look at them. So if you don't know how to do privacy settings, Google is a great tool. If you go to YouTube or Google and just type in how to change my privacy settings, there'll be a lot of videos out there that'll walk you through it. So And also, back on the table out there, I've got a couple of sheets, too, where there's other links to videos about how to get in and use Facebook, Twitter, if parents don't understand it or have questions about it. There's good resources back there about how to get in there and look around, or how it works. You know, make strong passwords. And then, you know, also talk about the friends list. Again, they should only befriend people that they know. A lot of times people just click accept for every friend request they get, and they shouldn't do that. It should only be people they know. Talk a little bit about sexting. That's, you know, posting nude or partially nude images. There has been quite a bit more of it lately, and there's a lot of apps that kind of make it a tough battle for parents and law enforcement. I'm sure everybody here's heard about Snapchat. For those of you that haven't, you can send pictures and videos. The sender can set it where the photo or the video will delete from the person that receives it after a certain amount of time. The problem is all these smartphones have a screen capture function, and the person getting that photo, they can still save it, even though it will delete after 10 seconds or whatever. A lot of kids will say to me, well, if that happens, then it sends me a message back that that happened. That isn't necessarily true on every type of a phone. And I guess I also tell them, is like, well, okay, the person you sent it to, they saved it. You know that they did it. Now what? How's that help you? They still have it, and they can share it with other people. So, and there's a lot of other apps out there that have made it incredibly difficult for law enforcement. They don't track any type of information about who gets the photograph, so we can't really go back and try to find where it all went to. So, for those that can't see, it says that 2.5% of teens have sexted. I kind of laughed when I saw that, because I'm telling you, it's way higher than that. And 7% say they have received a sext. I also think that is probably pretty low. I was talking earlier about doing the child pornography investigations. And when we've gone around and do those types of investigations, we do search warrants for the people that are sharing it, and we take their computers and their cell phones, and we look what they have. And some of these guys, and I have to say guys, because we have yet to come across a female that shares child pornography, so that's good job, ladies, don't be. But, you know, some of these guys, they have 30, 40, 50,000 images or videos saved on their hard drives, and a forensic examiner, he'll look through there. And what we're starting to see are these selfie images taken by teenage girls or boys in these collections. And we will ask them, where did you get that from? And he says, I just get it on file sharing from other guys that like looking at child pornography. They have it in their collection. And it really makes me wonder how somebody, a boy or a girl that took that and probably sent it to a friend who they trusted, and now it ends up in this, and I'm sorry, dirtbag's child pornography collection on his computer. And but we are seeing that happen. So I tell kids, when you send that, you have no control over it once the person getting it receives it, no matter how much you think you can trust them. And I think that finding these type of pictures and videos in these big collections of child pornography is that, well, you sent it to somebody and you trusted them, but obviously they shared it with somebody, and then they probably shared it with 10 people, and those 10 people shared it with 20, and it just exploded, and here it is in this guy's computer that law enforcement came across. So, and believe me, they love to trade, and they don't want anything in return for it. If you are a guy that has child pornography and your child pornography buddy says, send me everything you got, they'll say, yep, here you go. Nothing. They don't want money. They don't want anything. They just love to trade. They want to try to get new material. So then it's out there. And I don't tell that to scare kids, but I just say you have to think about that. And those images are out there, I mean, forever. I mean, we come across images of people that were victims 20 years ago in child pornography collections on computers. So, I mean, it's copied and shared just over and over again. So why do kids do this? They think it's to be funny. I think mostly that middle one is definitely the big thing, is they're looking, they think they're in love with somebody, or this is their boyfriend, they want to impress them. I think a lot of times kids are being pressured to do it. And if they don't, they're like, well, this girl won't like me, or this boy won't like me if I don't do this. And then obviously to share with a boyfriend or girlfriend, we all know how relationships are with young people. They don't last very long. And then if they get mad, then obviously one of the things that could happen is, well, I'm going to share this picture that you sent me. And that happens. And it happens in this area. So I really like the end of that video because I think we can all relate to that at some point. If we get a funny text or a funny picture, what's the first thing we do? Hey, I gotta send this to 50 people in my phone contacts and say, hey, look at this. Well, that's exactly what happens here. So gets shared very quickly. So obviously the consequences are is it is humiliating. I don't think kids think about that. They don't think that the person is going to share it. It can turn into a form of bullying. This third one down here, we haven't seen, thankfully we haven't had any cases like this, but there has been a lot in the country where a young person, a teenager, will be talked into sharing a photo, most of the time with an adult that they probably don't know or haven't met in person that they're just communicating with online. And they get talked into sending that one picture or a video. And then after they're like, the teenager's like, ah, I shouldn't have done that. That was wrong. I'm not going to do that anymore. Well, guess what the enticement person says? Yes, you are going to do that. And if you don't, I'm going to show this picture on Facebook, or I'm going to tell your parents, I'm going to show them. And they basically blackmail them into sending more. And normally what happens is the teenager is like, is scared. They don't want to get in trouble from their parents. They don't want the photo shared where everybody can see it. So they take more pictures and videos and keep doing this. So another thing why I tell kids, do not share photos and videos like that with people that you know, and especially people that you don't know, because you're inviting a blackmail situation. So there can be school discipline, police involvement. A lot of parents, I think, if they discover that their son or daughter has done this, might be leery about reporting it to law enforcement. Parents have asked me, if my teenage son or daughter sends a sex to someone, are you going to arrest them for producing and distributing child pornography? The answer is no. There's never been a case like that in Clinton County that I can think of where that's happened. Now, there are some states that are passing different types of laws that there are consequences for kids, but they're not at like the felony levels for the, you know, the adults that possess and distribute child porn. So if you find out, I tell parents that if you find out that your child has done something like this, you need to let law enforcement know about it, because we probably need to find out or try to find out where it all went to, especially if it's early on. You know, we might be able to get it curbed or get it stopped before it's shared with too many people. Talk about the consequences. Tell them never to forward a sexting image because, you know, you're part of the sharing it and maybe getting it into somebody's hands that shouldn't have it. You know, talk about healthy relationships. Talk about ways that an image can spread online. You know, we all know that popular videos and photos, they go viral, which means that they get shared with a lot of people. So that's kind of how this works. And then definitely encourage parents to report it. Yes, it is kind of an embarrassing situation, but it's more important that we know about it and try to find out where it ended up or what came about that they did it. You know, it could be a situation where it's an adult that they don't know, a stranger that's doing the blackmail situation. So sexual solicitation is any unwanted sexual requests or any sexual requests by an adult to a minor. So in Iowa, we have an enticement statute. A person has to be 15 years of age or younger. If you're 16, 17, it doesn't apply, which to me, I wish that would be changed, but unfortunately, that's the way it is now. How does this occur? Most of the time on social networking sites. It's more common among older teens. You don't see a lot of 8 or 9 year old boys and girls out there, you know, chatting with strange adult guys or strange adult women, but it's more common than you think with your teenagers in that 13 to 16 range. And as I've been doing this, I go around and do a lot of these types of presentations and talk to parents, and we mentioned before that you have to start looking on devices, and a lot of parents are doing that now, and we've had a lot more cases since we've started doing this where parents look, they find something, and then they're coming in and saying, I found this on my son or daughter's computer, they sent pictures, they're having chats with a person we have no idea who they are. So parents are getting better at looking. And I've definitely seen that in the last couple of years. We've had a lot more parents come in and self-report that they found something. So, most teens are solicited by peers. So the stranger, you know, adult, not as common. Most are by, you know, their peers. Maybe kids, they might know. Most of them aren't bothered by it. We talked a little bit about this earlier, how offenders groom children. I mean, young kids are naturally curious. And I can tell you that when I did undercover chat investigations, they really, you know, latch on to this. You get a lot of questions like, oh, have you ever kissed a boy before? Have you ever done this? That's how it starts. And then obviously, you can imagine, goes downhill after that. But they're exploiting that natural curiosity that kids have about relationships. They will gradually introduce explicit images. When I was doing chats all the time, you could guarantee you were going to get pornographic images. You know, most of the time adult, but sometimes child pornography. Usually you would get a photograph of the person, inappropriate photographs. Using their adult status to control kids. Even if they've never met them before, kids will, are, you know, taught, you listen to adults, you do what they say. So, big thing at the bottom is offering gifts. Sending prepaid cell phones in the mail, you know, prepaid debit cards, video games, DVDs, webcams. If an adult meets a kid, they are going to want to see them and communicate with them on a webcam. If the child does not have one, that is one thing they will send. Probably one of the first things before a cell phone or gift cards is they're going to be like, do you have a webcam? The child says, no, I will send you one in the mail. Another thing that parents need to be leery of about that is they will not send it to the house, because obviously if a parent sees a webcam or a cell phone show up, they're going to be like, well, who's this from? They will send it to a friend's house or somewhere where maybe the child can get to it before an adult can. So it may not come to your house, but if you see stuff like that, obviously you need to be asking questions. Where did you get this from? So important there. Signs if a child has been groomed is they're going to get the gifts. If you see a lot of unknown numbers on their cell phone, offenders will come from a long distance away, sometimes even overseas to meet a child. So if you see weird numbers on the telephone bill or on the phone, maybe time to start asking questions. They will reject family and friends. They will become very consumed by the person that they're talking with. So that's a sign. Getting very upset when they're not able to get online. That can be probably said of a lot of teenagers that aren't being groomed, but obviously a sign there. Big thing is minimizing the screen. I always tell parents, keep that computer or laptop in a common area, or always know what the password is so you can look at it and see what's on there. But if you're walking by and you're getting a lot of the screen minimization, it might be time to take a look and see what's going on there. So I think the most important message there is you have to tell somebody. If an adult or somebody you don't know is asking you, if they're asking you for pictures or to meet somewhere, That's something definitely that law enforcement needs to be aware of. So, again, talk to your kids about healthy relationships. You know, sending pictures or talking about meeting a complete stranger or somebody you've never met in person online, that's not healthy. You know, set a policy for meeting offline for older teens. You know who your kids' friends are online. Look on there. Look at those accounts or be able to have access to it. Know the passwords. You know, every once in a while, just look on there. So, talk to your kids about the warning signs, and I definitely is call the police, especially if it's somebody that doesn't, you know, appear to be anybody they've met in person or know. You can report to the cyber tip line. The website's down there at the bottom. And just a word about that is if you don't feel comfortable about going to, you know, telling somebody about it, if you report to the cyber tip line, they can kind of figure out where you're at or, you know, and they can get it to local law enforcement so we can work on it. So, but things that need to be reported, obviously, is the person that sends any photos or videos with obscene content to children. Ask your child for sexual images, or they're talking to them in a sexual manner, or they want to meet your kid in person. I mean, those are dangerous situations. And there's been a lot of cases around here where it's happened. You know, kids as young as 12 and 13 chatting with somebody online, and they say, "I'm going to come and get you at school tomorrow. Meet me out front." And it's happened. And I think there was a girl down in a few years ago, southeast Iowa, they found her in a tent living in Florida like a couple of days later from her school. So there are cases in Iowa. There's been quite a few of them, actually. Talking about cyberbullying, so I mean, most of you probably know that basically all cyberbullying is, it's just like your typical bullying that it can occur at school, but it happens online. And in my opinion, it's worse because cyberbullying can happen while they're at school, and then it continues after they get home because they, you know, they have their device with them everywhere they go, so they can get messages or they can be bullied. So some examples, obviously, are sending mean texts. We talked earlier about photoshopping photos, creating fake profiles. We get a lot of complaints from parents where other kids have done that to their son or daughter. Posting fight videos, spreading rumors and gossip, embarrassing pictures. Just saw a report this week where another student was filmed in the bathroom, using the bathroom, and then shared it. So obviously that's meant to embarrass someone. And then obviously threatening or harassing comments. I tell parents and kids, you know, if somebody is threatening them or harassing them, you know, they can't be charged in Iowa, which is called harassment. And even if you're a minor, you can still be charged with that. And that would fall under this type of communication online stuff. So, cyberbullying, it can spread faster. Bullies can get to a wider audience. You might just have your little group here at school. But when you add technology to it, you can get to a lot of people out there, other schools, other states, everywhere. And like I said before, it goes home with the child. Suicide is rare in a cyberbullying case. I know that we see on the news a lot, they get a lot of attention now, and it might seem like it's happening a lot or happening all the time, and that's not necessarily the case. Usually, cyberbullying victims are people that take their own lives. You have the cyberbullying, but I think they've seen that people that actually take that step, the bullying is more severe, like at school and in person, and maybe not so much the element of the cyber in there. So, kind of a good combination there of, looks like she sent out an inappropriate picture and then it led to, you know, a bullying situation. So, you know, in a situation, you're going to have the bully, the victim, and then you're going to have the bystanders too. And the bystanders can become the most important person in this because if they tell somebody, you know, they might be able to put an end to it. So I tell kids, like, they may not be participating in it, but if they know about it, you know, tell somebody or go and be a friend to that victim and say, it's okay to go tell somebody. Please tell somebody about it. Let's do something about this. So I try to tell kids, just don't stand by and let it happen. A victim, these are signs. They might stop using the computer or the cell phone altogether. So especially for a teenager, that would be unusual. So they might act very nervous when they get an email, an instant message, or a text. They seem uneasy about going to school, and they completely withdraw from friends and family. So a lot of warning signs there that if you start seeing things like those, it could be a cyberbullying type situation. You know, how can you help? You might want to, I guess I don't really like that top one, consider saving the evidence. I do tell parents, please save it. A lot of times parents will call in and say, well, my son or daughter is getting these messages on here. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'd love to see them. Well, we got rid of them. Save them. It's important for us. You know, especially if we can, you know, make a case or do a prosecution, that's going to be important evidence. So, you know, you can block people on all these applications. Or you can just set up a new account and start all over. And then obviously, again, is talk to somebody at school and report it, tell somebody about it. So, some cyberbullying behaviors is, these are the people doing the bullying, is they quickly switch screens or close programs. Obviously, they're trying to hide from adults what they're doing. They use the computer all the time. They get usually upset if they can't use the computer. There might be a lot of excessive laughing while they're online, or they avoid discussions about what they're doing. That bottom one I think is a good point, and I think it's kind of true with a lot of teenagers, is they will have multiple accounts. They have more than one Facebook or more than one Twitter. So they have the ones for parents to see, and then the other ones maybe for some other stuff. So. You know, again, establish those expectations about, you know, what your kids can do and what's appropriate and what is what the consequences are going to be. And, you know, you yourself be a good model for online behavior. I've seen a lot of parents on there that act worse than the kids sometimes on social media. So, you know, talk to your kid about not being a bystander. You know, tell them who they can talk to or encourage them to report if they have a friend or they know about somebody. Encourage them to stand up for the victim. For the person that's being bullied, you know, that might mean the world to them, just to have somebody, you know, that's there to help them and stand up with them. And then help them report it. You know, you can. There's places online, like I showed you before, or talking to somebody at school or a trusted adult. A lot of times parents ask me about what can they do from the technology end. There's a ton of filtering and monitoring software out there that you can put on cell phones, computers. I mean, some of them will even log every keystroke that they make so you can see what they're typing to people. So, you know, talk to your cell phone provider. In a situation like this, you might have a son or a daughter who's being bullied. You can block people from sending text messages or making phone calls. A lot of smartphones have apps now where you can block out people, so you don't even have to call your cell phone provider. You just go in the App Store, Google Play, and they got a ton of them in there. So, you know, research other options for different types of mobile devices. You know, look at individual apps, and look at built-in security features that, you know, might come with apps or that are already in your phone. So. Probably the most important message is for parents is, I know you can't watch technology all the time. You can't watch what kids are doing 24/7, and there's not a program out there that's going to catch everything. So the big thing is you have to talk to your kids about what they're doing online, who they're talking to. You know, I just tell parents is like, you'd be surprised if you ask your son or daughter, hey, what kind of apps do you got on that cell phone? A lot of them will be glad, like, oh, yeah, here, look at this. This is what this one does, or this one's pretty cool, or this is what this one can do. So a lot of them will show you on there. But again, you know, when you hand that technology over, you know, maybe communicate right from the beginning, you know, I'm okay with you having this, but I'm going to be able to look at it. You know, I need to know your password. We're not going to have the phone locked out, things like that. So it can go a long way to stop problems before they even start. Like I said, as we wrap up here, that website up there, netsmarts.org, they got a lot of good stuff on there. You can see over here, parents, for parents, educators, teens and tweens themselves, there's a lot of stuff for kids on there, more videos and stuff. They've got a lot of, they got tip sheets, a lot of good videos. I look at it all the time. They're always putting new stuff up there for law enforcement. So take a look at that. This NetSmart, the NetSmarts, they also have like activities, games and stuff. This is mostly for younger kids. This video or this presentation that you're seeing is very different from like what I would show to kids that are like in first grade, second grade. You know, they make appropriate videos and presentations like that about how to be safe, but you can go on there and look at them yourself or have your kids watch them. So this nsteens.org, same thing, mostly for older kids. You know, parents can look at it and teens themselves. A lot of good things on there. Before I wrap up, I guess the main thing, a lot of parents ask me, or they say they're overwhelmed by this technology. He goes, we don't know how to use it. We don't know what to look for. You know, everybody has that tech person that they know, a friend, ask them. I've left cards on that back table. I don't know everything, but please, if you ever have a question, you can call me and ask me. If you know, just like, well, where would I look in Facebook to see if my child is communicating with somebody? I can help you and walk you through what to look for. A good place to start is look in where the instant messaging parts of these applications are. Like Twitter has direct messaging, Facebook has instant messaging. If there's any type of communication going on that kids don't want adults to see, that's where it's going to be. Can it be deleted? Yes, it can be deleted. But if you suspect or you do see other chats and it looks like something serious or a stranger communicating with your kid, we could possibly get it from Facebook. There are ways. Once it's deleted off that phone or that laptop, that doesn't mean that it's gone forever. So there's things that we can do to help out and investigate and follow up on things. So.